Welcome to the Hospitality Forward podcast with listeners in more than 160 countries worldwide.
My name is Hannah Lee. I am president and founder of Hannah Lee Communications, an award-winning global PR agency specialized in hospitality and travel.
And I'm Michael Ann Stendick, editor-in-chief of Hannah Lee Communications, as well as the award-winning co-author of The Japanese Art of the Cocktail and a food and beverage writer. Helping the community has always been part of our agency's mission. We understand that a lot of business owners, bartenders, chefs, sommeliers, and others might not have the resources to hire a PR agency. We believe everyone has a story to share, so we created our podcast where our listeners can get to know leading reporters and writers and start building relationships.
Each week, these top journalists from around the globe share their practical advice on how hospitality and travel industry professionals can be featured in their stories.
In fact, one of our loyal listeners got featured in the New York Times after listening to our podcast and following our media guest tips. So, you could be next. In addition, we give away a copy of our agency's book, The Japanese Art of the Cocktail, to a listener who shares how our podcast helped them tell their story to the media. Simply email us at hello@hannahleecommunications.com, have Hospitality Forward in the subject line, and share the tip that you learned. And now, on with the show. In this episode, we're delighted to chat with Jillian Darrow. Jillian is a lifestyle writer and editor with a particular interest in luxury travel as well as wine and spirits. She writes for top publications including Robb Report, Decanter, Michelin Guides, Food and Wine, Forbes, Travel and Leisure, Wine Enthusiast, and more. Jillian holds a certification in WSET2. She currently resides in Boston and has also lived in Bermuda, London, New York, and Santiago, Chile. Hi, Jillian.
Great to see you.
Hi. It is so great to be here.
Jillian, take us back to your journey to journalism. You started your career with an internship at Bermuda's national newspaper. So did you always want to be a journalist?
I did. I knew from a very young age I wanted to be a journalist. I didn't quite necessarily know exactly what I wanted to write about. I loved travel. I loved food. As I got older, I loved wine. But for a long time, I just loved writing and telling people stories. So I originally thought I would go into political journalism. And really, that path kind of changed when I was in London for a study abroad. I was traveling all around the UK and kept a blog for myself. It was one of those aha moments where I realized I really loved telling people stories and meeting people along the way of travel. So I pivoted and for my last 2 years of college, really, really focused on travel writing.
So you mentioned that you lived in London, but you also lived in New York City, Santiago, Chile, and now Boston. So what accounts for your globetrotting lifestyle and how has working and living around the world shaped your writing?
I really think that travel is just so impactful. Even if I wasn't writing about travel, there's just so much that you learn when you're in a different country, when you're in a different environment and meeting new people. When I was living in Santiago, it was right after college, so I was young and I was, you know, far from home, and I really found like solace going out to the vineyards on the weekend, and I started writing more about wine. And you know, that led me to where I am now, where I'm writing about 50-50 wine versus luxury travel. And I really think that I credit that experience to really emphasizing my path in wine as well.
Jillian, you are very widely published and write for over a dozen leading publications. So can you tell us what kinds of topics you cover?
Yes, I cover luxury travel, wine, spirits. Within travel, I also cover sometimes a little bit of wellness. You know, with travel just being so trendy, especially after the pandemic, everyone's getting back out there. There's a lot of emphasis on different genres of travel. And so I've kind of had to keep an eye out and keep my finger on the pulse for those. And wellness is definitely one of those. So I do cover that as well.
Overall, what's your criteria for deciding if a story is newsworthy?
In terms of what speaks to me, I love telling unique stories, brands that are doing really interesting things, challenging the norm. And I personally love small family production, like with wines or spirits. Those stories just have a little bit more character to them. Of course, not every story can have this like really compelling family angle. You know, it's just, I think that's why there's such great, a great variety of stories out there, because different stories speak to different people. So, you know, while a new release from Napa might be really exciting for me, some other wine writer might think Napa's overrated and that's why they focus on French wine. It is pretty subjective, but to me, those unique stories with really compelling, interesting angles or someone doing something different.
Do you typically then write more trend stories or roundups or profiles or feature stories? How does it work?
The lay of the land these days is really interesting. I think feature stories are definitely my preference, but editors really like roundups. Editors like clicks, SEO, and performance articles. So what I like to write might be a little different than what I'm writing regularly. That's not to say anything bad against roundups or SEO stories. They have their place. But personally, what gets me really, really excited is when I can deep dive into a feature. I think that kind of part of journalism is dying, and that's sad. But hopefully, it will make a comeback like vinyl. And
yes, exactly.
That's all we can hope for.
Could you let us know what your top three publications that you write for and how they differ from one another in terms of their readership?
In terms of travel, I'm really focusing on hotel openings for Rob Report. And for Michelin guides, I'm working on wine and spirit stories as well as unique cuisines and experiences that you can have at Michelin-starred restaurants around the world. And for my third publication, I write for Decanter about different wine trends as well. They all really differ from each other because Rob Report is really that upper class, elevated luxury traveler who's looking for the ultra premium and an experience that they won't get reading a regular travel magazine. Michelin Guide, everyone's very foodie, but also really interested in the restaurant beyond the restaurant, like the architecture, the cocktail programs, the wine programs. And I think telling that story beyond the menu has been really fun from a journalism perspective. And Decanter, you know, everyone, it's a premium wine magazine. So that's the readership, but also you get the wine beginners. And I've been writing some beginner articles like about how to bring a wine for a dinner party and how to choose a wine for bring your own booze to a restaurant. And that's been fun because it's a learning experience for me too. And those stories do really well.
So why don't you walk us through the process of you coming up with a story idea, pitching your editor, and having your story published? What does that look like?
As a freelancer, you really have to structure your week. And I've learned that I will take calls on one or two days of weeks. But when I'm taking calls, I can't pitch. It's just your mind isn't in it. And so I will have pitching dedicated days where I'm not doing anything else. So I will sit down and think about, you know, some experiences that I've had recently and really just diving into those thoughts, writing them down. I'm old fashioned, so I like to write my train of thoughts and then putting them all into an Excel document and thinking about where that story would really thrive and flourish and which editor would really appreciate that story and trust me with those stories. So from there, I pitch those editors, send a follow-up or two. So it's really a nuanced process, but once you get into the groove, it just kind of flows. Once the editor accepts it, you always just feel really excited and giddy to start on this new story, reach out to the contacts, interview who you need to, set up interviews, and then file a story, usually like 2 or 3 weeks later. If it's a fast turnaround story, usually a week.
How often do they assign a story to you?
I would say probably it's like 40%, 60% with 60% pitching. And those are typically, you know, the SEO commerce stories that people are really, really looking to fill. So they reach out to you because they want you to fulfill that because there's a topic trending that week, or they need a quick story. Every now and then as well for like a feature, if they know that you've been somewhere, or say I live in Boston, if they are writing about Boston, if the publication knows I live here, they'll reach out and just ask if I can contribute or if I can write the full article. There's definitely a time and place for it, but I would say it's less and less.
You hold a certification in WSET2. So what do you like most about writing about wine?
I just love how wine is so different and it really brings people together, but it's also from family businesses. It's a way to make money. And I just really enjoy diving into the nuances. There is so much to learn about wine. I mean, I feel like I barely know anything, which probably I shouldn't say because then my editors are going to be like, why are you writing for us? But I think that you need to stay humble when you work in wine because there's just too much and no one can know it all. They can know a lot, but they can't know it all. And I feel like I'm really familiar with Napa wines, Italian wines, Alsatian wines, which is super niche. But I spent six days there on a trip with their wine consortium. And, you know, it was really eye-opening being able to just see the terroir and hike the Rangen, which is such a steep incline where the vines are on. And being able to see that firsthand allows you to really understand the nuances of the wines. And I'm hoping to keep doing more trips like that where I can understand a region a little bit more. But right now, those are some of the wines that I really enjoy.
You know, I started our PR business with wine, especially Italian wine. So Mionetto Prosecco was our first wine client. So I traveled to Italy multiple times and fell in love with it. So I share the passion for Italian wine with you.
Yes, there's really nothing like touching down in Italy and having that first sip of wine with your little aperitif, like some salty olives. I mean, it's the best feeling.
Puts you in the right mood.
It's a dream.
It is.
So let's talk a little bit about your work, Jillian. We really loved your food and wine article on the trend of hotels serving welcome cocktails that often reflect the destination and even local ingredients. It really makes a hospitable gesture that much more meaningful. What else do you see hotels doing to attract guests to make their stays memorable? Or, in your opinion, what should they be doing more of?
I think the hotel welcome drink is a really amazing example of what hotels can be doing more of just making a guest feel welcome to the destination. I mean, generally speaking, Hawaiian hotels, island hotels very easily are able to offer travelers a sense of place because they're checking into a hotel room where they're on this beautiful beach, or there's a lot of, you know, they're greeted with a beautiful fruity cocktail and with local rum. And it's like, that is really just the easiest way to be like, hey, this is a drink. Some people aren't going to care about it. Some people are just going to say, wow, a free drink. But most people are going to be like, oh, what did you say the rum was like, and who makes it? What local distillery? And then that opens the opportunity for them to go visit the local distillery and learn from the folks that are there about rum and its background and its effect on the destination's history. So I think it's such an easy, effortless way for hotels to welcome guests, but not everyone's doing it. And I think whether it's the drink or I think beyond that, hotels can do more about welcoming guests to a destination and bringing the destination into the hotel.
Moving on to another article that we enjoy. So we are very much inspired by your article on Forbes on women-owned and operated tequila brands. And I mean, as an entrepreneur myself, I love seeing other women get recognized for their leadership role. So what else are you seeing in the spirits industry that excites you?
I love the innovation that's going on right now. There is just so much happening from infused spirits to CBD in spirits or THC in spirits that I think is growing and trending. And I think it kind of showcases how brands can cross over from like moments of pop culture to sports to what people are really like looking at and experiencing on their day-to-day lives. And you know, there's the whole Dry January movement that I really think extends beyond January these days. And you know, it can be really any month. I know people do Sober October or Dry July, but it doesn't have to rhyme just to, because you're doing a dry month. So there's also that movement that's really attracting these brands to offer like lighter or low ABV beverages or mocktails. And what I'm following is kind of like the other side of it, where because dry months are so popular, there's actually like a decline in sales in a lot of industries, or at least for restaurants. Talking to a couple restaurant friends, they've said lately that their inventory just isn't getting used. It isn't getting drunk. And that's because of these like sober months and sprees. And I think that's unfortunate for restaurants, and like how that's going to affect restaurants long term is going to be really interesting. Also, the paradigm shift. I don't know if since wine sales are decreasing at restaurants, if that will mean prices will come down. There's a lot of like, oh, what's going to happen because of this movement? So that's kind of what I'm following, is like that side. And maybe it's not exciting, it's a little sad, but it's interesting and worth following.
Absolutely. So why don't we circle back to hotels? You had a fascinating story on hotels and resorts offering wine and spirits lockers for their guests. And, you know, why do you think this amenity is resonating with luxury travelers?
So, yeah, when my editor and I talked about this, which I wrote it for Rob Report, he was really interested in like diving into the like, why do people do this? Because you can just buy a bottle, and why would you pay to keep the bottle? You're paying more over time. But I think the reality is you don't want to drink the whole thing in one night. It's a really high, exquisite, ultra premium whiskey, tequila, cognac, and it's a sipping experience, right? So you have one, maybe two, and then you check out like 2 days later, and you don't want to leave the bottle, and you're not going to travel with an open bottle. So I think it was really interesting to dive into and see what some of these people were posting in their lockers, and why they thought it was worth it. And I think it's also a status symbol too, just to be like, hey, come to this hotel. This is what you can get. They can offer it to friends. They can offer it to colleagues. And it's an interesting concept for sure. And I do think it's going to continue to rise as well.
And what other innovations are you seeing in the space?
For hotels, there's definitely this push towards wellness, which I think it's been happening for a long time. But I think multi-generational wellness is really being encouraged. Canyon Ranch just announced that they will be, for the first time ever, opening up a wellness camp to kids and families in the summer. And I believe that's just the Berkshires location and their Austin location. And, you know, how impressionable younger minds are, I think the wellness movement will just continue to grow, because if kids are going to a wellness facility, you know, when they're younger, they're really going to see the importance of it and how they're feeling. And I think there might be an age that's too young, but for you know, the middle ground, I think it's something that's worth pursuing. And it's cool to have that experience as a family. And back to that like sober curious conversation, hotels are definitely offering like mocktail programs, where instead of checking in and you get an all-inclusive access to you know, the bar, you're getting all-inclusive access to mocktails, which, you know, they do add up. Mocktails are about $10, $12, $15 too. And that's because they're offering these really, really quality ingredients, and they don't want to cut corners. So I think hotels being like leaning into the sober curious movement is interesting to see. And it's admirable that they believe in it, and that travelers are more and more just saying, hey, I don't want to go on a vacation and feel like I forgot the whole thing because I was drinking margaritas by the pool and had maybe too many. You know, they're attracting an audience that's more, really wants to be present and taking this vacation to like feel that. So those are definitely two trends, the wellness and sober curious. They just continue to grow year after year.
Some of our listeners, you know, might not have the means to hire a PR agency, but we truly believe that, you know, everyone has a story to tell. So for those who don't have a relationship with you yet, how can they begin to create a working relationship with you?
I love when people reach out when I haven't heard from them. Email is definitely the best way because things just get lost. I know social media is such a great way to stay connected with people, but I find that like my DMs and messages and followers, like it's sometimes things can get lost in the shuffle there. And just make an email personal, just say, you know, how you found me and what about my work that you, you know, admire, that you want to work with me with, and, say, you know, in the headline, like heard you on the podcast, hi, saying hi, or make the email personal. Tell me a little bit about yourself too. It can be one sentence. It doesn't have to be your bio. Also, another tip for emails, for just PR in general is don't ever, I mean, I look at a block of text and I'm like, this is just overwhelming. And I think if you just a simple, like, break in between sentences is easy. It's more likely to catch my attention, and I think many other writers' attentions too.
Is there anything else that they should not be doing?
Yeah, I get a lot of emails after I've written an article that says, hey, I really loved this article. I was wondering if you could update it with my client. And it's just, that's not ethical. It's not how journalism works. And once the freelancer has sent the editor their email, it's really off of our plate. The editor has full control over it. So we are not going to update it. You can comment on it and say, wow, I really like this article, but don't ask us to update it. It's just not going to happen. And I think it's quite frankly a waste of both of our times. And I always just try to kindly say that to PR because I don't want them to think I'm ignoring them, but I do think it's important for them to realize down the road that just that's not the way this works.
So, Jillian, in your opinion, what social media channels do you find the most effective for doing your work?
I am really only on Instagram. I tried to get into TikTok and it just was too much for me. Maybe it has something to do with like my millennial status, but I couldn't get into the videos. And I know a lot of people have found success on it, but Instagram for me is just, I really enjoy just like being able to share photos. And I think it's such a great way to supplement words with photos because some people don't always read all the articles. So being able to show the images is important. And I like a static image to really like admire the beauty of where someone's been. It's a fun tool when used efficiently.
What type of content from hospitality and travel professionals get your attention? You know, for example, bartenders, chefs, or hoteliers, or sommeliers.
What should they be posting?
I love just like innovation. Like I follow a couple cocktail accounts that are just really always just trying something new. I'm a martini girl, so I am always looking for a riff on a good martini. And these cocktail pages just have this like beautiful content of this like perfectly frosted glass. I just think they do these photos that some creators are taking are really, really stunning. Those tend to catch my attention. I don't tend to watch like reels through. Chef's Roll is a beautiful Instagram for cuisine and that like meticulous detail. It's like Michelin starred plating that you get to just watch in front of you. Those are reels I'll watch. You can just, they use like these, you know, the tiniest tweezers, and they're placing, you know, just one single leaf here and one single leaf on the other side of the dish. It's gorgeous, and it's really mesmerizing.
So, Jillian, we call our podcast Hospitality Forward because we're focused on the future of this fascinating industry. So are there any individuals or companies that you think are pushing the envelope that you would like to shout out?
Yeah, regenerative travel is doing some really amazing work highlighting hotels that are bettering the world, basically, like bettering their destination. They're connected to not only like sustainability initiatives and regenerative practices, but working with communities, local communities, and educating locals, and really just kind of focusing on a hotel that is, it's more than a stay. It's, you know, it's really changing and affecting their destination for the better. So regenerative travel is definitely one that I like love seeing develop. And it's kind of, you know, like a Leading Hotels of the World or a Small Luxury Hotels, like it's this consortium of hotels. And it's a real honor to be a part of it, because I think it shows how much the work of a hotel is paying off. For example, one hotel in Cartagena on the islands is Blue Apple. And they are just, it's a Blue Apple Beach Club. And they have an amazing like recycling program and water waste program. And the islands never had this until the hotel put that infrastructure in, and they really changed that island community for the better. They're doing so much more there, but for the sake of time, just look up Blue Apple and you'll see what a hotel is and really should be doing.
As someone who travels a lot, what country is on your bucket list to visit and why?
Oh gosh, so many. But I am really excited to go to Japan one day. I've had many opportunities come up, but just have not followed through with, because I want to go for like a month and really experience like everything that Japan has to offer. I know a month isn't even enough time, but I want to go all around and to all the cities, to, you know, the islands, to the mountains, and really take it all in. So that's high on my radar. And then I'm really fascinated by Namibia, the way the desert and the land meets the water. It's just some of these striking photos that I've seen. That's been high on my list too.
So let's shift gears for a moment and ask what your favorite go-to cocktail is and why, and who you'd like to share it with.
So as I mentioned briefly, I love a good martini. I like a dirty vodka martini, slightly dirty, with blue cheese olives. That is my go-to. I love drinking them with my parents, because we started this during the pandemic. I was in lockdown with them, and we were just trying to make time fun, you know, and we did pizza and martini Fridays. We wouldn't drink during the week in effort to save some, you know, sanity and try to have some sort of normalcy. So on that Friday, I mean, every day was blending together. So it was like, oh, it's Friday. This is exciting. We had something to look forward to. And now they say I make the best martini. I won't claim that, but I love to take them out and try new martini, like different martinis with them. And, we have such a high standard, and we've had so many of them that it's always fun to be like, I found a really good one, and then take them there.
So that's a very worthy family tradition. So looking into your crystal ball, what do you think the next it cocktail will be this year?
Ooh, you know, it's funny because I think everyone has this big hurrah about the Aperol Spritz. I personally love an Aperol Spritz. I don't think it's going anywhere, but I think variations of it might become more popular. Like touching on some of the things we talked about, the low ABV, I think people will want some sort of a spritz cocktail that for the summer that's lighter, refreshing, easy to make, but also easy to drink.
Before we let you go, what is the best way for our listeners to contact with you?
So I am always available on email. Jillian, J-I-L-L-I-A-N, Dara, D-A-R-A, 1@gmail.com. I also have a newsletter called Jilux, J-I-L-U-X, which is a Substack, and it's a biweekly email, and really highlights like leaders in the hospitality industry, things that I'm doing at the moment. It's a lot of luxury hotel travel coverage that doesn't always get out on my publications. And of course, always follow me on Instagram. My Instagram is just Jillian Dara, my name. I will try to follow back or engage. But as I mentioned earlier, sometimes it's a little challenging to keep up with it all.
Well, Jillian, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And it was so great. And I can't wait to see you and share a martini or two together.
I can't wait. Cheers in the meantime.
Now, that was a worldly chat with Jillian. Now that you know what Jillian is looking for, please feel free to reach out to her and introduce yourself. And don't forget to mention that you heard her on our Hospitality Forward podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with your friends and colleagues. And be sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your favorite shows. Also, for all media guests to date, you can find their information and episodes on our agency's website, www.hanaleecommunications.com.
Until then, join us as we move hospitality forward together.